Welcome to the Dare to Scale show with me, Varsha.
And me, Evan.
So what is Dare to Scale? Over the years that we've been coaching founders and business owners, much like yourselves, we work through a framework called Dare to Scale.
Dare to Scale, indeed. That framework has helped loads of business owners, and that is what this show is all about. So, put on your big picture thinking hat.
Oh, and your headphones. And come join us and enjoy the ride. Hello. Marilyn joins us today and the Master Spotlight. Marilyn, welcome.
Thanks, Varsha and Evan. I'm so excited to be here.
Hey, Marilyn, welcome.
We are so excited to be here as well. Marilyn is the founder and CEO of Cosmic Centers.
That's right. Indeed. What a name.
It's an absolutely wonderful name. And in terms of that, where did the inspiration for that name come from? And tell us a little bit about your journey.
Sure. So, I mean, I'll start you off at an important moment, which was last year, March 19, I was the head of the Dubai Opera. And that was the moment where Dubai was starting to go into lockdown and the opera suspended its operations and I was let go. And so, yeah, first time for me. So I went home March 19. I'm like, okay, country's going into lockdown. Won't need to look for a job anytime soon. But also, I was in a very privileged place, which was that I had enough savings that I didn't have to worry about where my next meal was going to come from or how I was going to pay for rent. And so in an odd way, being let go in the beginning of lockdown was actually a real blessing for me because it gave me an opportunity to just stop, right? And to think about what it was that I wanted to spend the next 5, 10, 15 years doing. And I was always knew that I would end up running a company or starting my own company. I just didn't know when. And it occurred to me that this was the perfect time to do it because I literally had nothing left to lose. And I started thinking about what is the thing or the topics that I've always been really obsessed with and passionate about as a manager, as a teacher, because I've been teaching at university for a while. And what came up to me is that something that I've always just, it's the one thing that has brought me the most joy is when I'm able to help a group of people come together and collaborate in a way that their outcome is bigger than the sum of their parts. And this was the beginning of lockdown for Dubai, but in a lot of other places, it was still like people were still not sure what they were doing. In some countries, it took another month or two before that would happen. But you could see that one of the biggest challenges to our human capability of collaboration was going to be the fact that for the first time ever, we were all going to have to be working away from one another. And while I didn't know what we were going to sell, I knew that that was the problem that I wanted to address. And one day, you know, we were like, so this was March 19. I applied for my company on April 1st, which wasn't a joke. We were always joking, like, it's kind of funny that you're doing this on April 1st because it sounds like you're pulling our leg, but no, you're really doing this. At the time, I was locked down with my husband and my best friend. We were sat down at dinner and I was like, I need a name for this company. Like, even if it doesn't end up being the brand that we use, I just need anything to kind of register the company. And we were brainstorming and I think we came up with a bunch of things. Then we were all laughing because there were these memes coming out about how everybody would be wearing, you know, corporate shirts with pajama bottoms. And I was like, oh, it's like a centaur, you know, half business, half casual, half human, half horse. And I'm like, great, centaurs. I'm like, centaur 42, because 42 is a number that means a lot to me. And then we were also joking about like all the Zoom backgrounds that everybody was using. And at the time, people hadn't figured out that they could upload their own. So they were using the native Zoom ones. And one of them is like this space background and everybody was floating in outer space. And so I said, cosmic centaurs, because everybody is going to be a cosmic centaur because of this pandemic. And that's how we started the company. And I was like, great, I'm just going to apply to that. And I'm like, can you imagine like the people at DMCC reading this company's name? Like they're going to think I was smoking up when I invented it. And truthfully, no, I was just on lockdown in Dubai with my husband, my best friend, having dinner. And that's how we came up with it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Look, I love the 42 piece because that is the answer to everything, if I remember rightly.
That is exactly right.
And the collaboration when you're working with people and the synergy of the sum of everything obviously giving a bigger result. What's important to you about that?
I often joke that the reason why collaboration matters so much to me as a person is because I had divorced parents and I spent my whole life getting people to get along with each other. But that's not, I don't know that's why. I think it's also like, if I go to like why it matters to me personally, I just hate being alone. And I love being able to build things with others. And I know we're going to talk about my Dare to Scale statement at some point. And that's where that comes from. I just feel like when we're able to cross cultural, religious, personal boundaries and connect with one another, we can really create magic. And maybe it comes from being brought up in Lebanon, that's like, you know, has a very kind of diverse socioeconomical and religious backdrop where you have to constantly learn to navigate those cultural differences and collaborate with others, even just to build a country, which we've clearly failed at doing, but it's something that you learn that you have to address very young in Lebanon. And so I just feel like that's always been a recurrent theme. And I remember even a colleague of mine at INSEAD, he took me through this, I don't remember the questions he asked me, but essentially it was an exercise to get you to like your one true essence, like the one thing that is pervasive across everything that you do. And it came down to that. He's like, the essence was, I just want to help people connect and collaborate. And it's always been about that for me. So part of it has to do with my upbringing and my kind of cultural background. And part of it comes from a real belief that you can't build anything meaningful on your own. I don't think you can.
And that's incredibly powerful. Absolutely. So taking that as a premise, when did you realize that that's what you could do with Cosmic Centaurs? Because you said you didn't know what you were going to sell to start with.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, from the get-go, I knew that would be the theme that I wanted to address. So I just didn't know what the product would be. And I still say that. I say, like, if tomorrow what it takes for us to help teams and humans collaborate is we need to design the office of the future, then that's what we'll do. So in that sense, I didn't care what the product was. I cared what problem we were solving. And it's really funny because I've been teaching design thinking at university for a long time, right? And it wasn't until I had to build my own company that I really saw how to apply those concepts that I teach at university, where I say, like, what you should be worrying about isn't what product you're selling, it's what pain point you're solving for your customer. And once you figure that out, the product will come on its own. And here it was just like, I understand that there's going to be a bunch of human beings and managers and executives and HR professionals that are going to struggle with how do you build organizations? Because at the essence of why do you have organizations? Like, if you go back to the fundamentals of why companies exist, right? They exist because the task is bigger than one person, but also in order to deliver that task, the fundamental problem of an organization is how do you divide labor and how do you integrate outcome, right? That's the basis. And the integration sometimes is as simple as like, you send me a slide, Wersha will send me a slide, we'll just stick them together. But sometimes the integration is, there's a metaphor that one of my professors uses for collaboration, which I think is beautiful. He says, it's like, it's as if each of us has one piece of a puzzle and we're working on it together. And when you, Evan, put your puzzle down, the shape and color of the piece in my hand changes. And that's true collaboration. It's not just like sticking things together. It's the fact that the outcome of our work collectively cannot be attributed to anybody, right? And so I've always known that that was the problem we were going to solve, because so many people, because of this remote work problem, were going to be faced with issues and decisions and new models that they had no idea how to deal with. And the fundamentals of what it is to have an organization, to run one, to create culture for it, were going to be put in question. And this was last year, right? Like, I couldn't, now I can say a lot of this with eloquence because, like, we know what happened, right? But always, you know, hindsight is 2020, right? But that's how I felt at the time. I was like, I'm pretty sure a bunch of people are going to need help. And while I don't know what I'm going to sell them, is it going to be software? Is it going to be services? Is it going to be consulting? Is it going to be frameworks? Am I going to write a book? Like, it didn't matter. What mattered is this is the fundamental problem that I want to address. And this is what I want to obsess about for the next 10 years.
Fantastic. And you've had 12 months of runway. Mm-hmm. And because we've known you for some time, you've had some wonderful success in Europe. Do you find that different regions have different, I don't know, resistance to working together in the way that you envisage?
I think, for example, so we're in Dubai, and I often say this, the Middle East has a trading mentality because that's our history, right? We're merchants. We bought things from China and took them over to, you know, we've always been on some silk route somewhere. And so in that sense, I don't think we're very good at building organizations. And in fact, you'd be hard pressed to find, you know, to be able to name right now more than, I know only two companies from this side of the world that have listed on the NASDAQ, just like to take some kind of KPI as an example. And so in that sense, I don't think we worry a lot about human collaboration. European companies have had to do that for multiple reasons. First of all, there have been organizations in Europe for a longer time, just historically. But also, they've had two world wars. And I come from INSEAD, so I'm very ingrained in that. This idea of business as a force for good, of like building companies and bridging cultures as a way to maintain peace. And there's a lot of data to show that that's pretty accurate. Countries that have business relationships with each other fight less. And I think also Europe, but I think a lot of other continents, I just happen to have a big network in Europe, but it's funny, the other day someone asked me this, they're like, don't you find that people are not willing to kind of rethink fundamentally what the future of work is going to be like once you've helped them figure out remote work? It's like someone broke a foot and I bandaged, then they don't want to do anything else. They're just like, oh, thanks, I'm fine, I'm going to leave. And I said, I think that the companies that really understand what they need to do today are those that can grasp complexity. And generally what I've found in my anecdotal sample is they're companies that are more than 30 or 40 years old. Because if you're a manager in a company like that, you've already, like one of the companies we work with, and I can cite them because they, you know, I have approval to do that. So Vinci Construction Terrassement, they're more than 100 years old. They've been through two world wars, to cite, you know, just a few of the things they've had to deal with in terms of change. They've been through the creation of the European Union. So managers and organizations like that, they understand what change means. And they have the institutional history, if not knowledge, to know that this company has had to deal with change before. And what allowed it to survive was its ability to reinvent itself. And they're not going to be the executive who misses the boat. And so companies like that are more willing to think about the future of work in a more profound way than just, can you just help me figure out how to do this remote thing because my employees are tired? And that's why I think we've found more success in Europe than on this side of the world.
Just a simple question. Are you finding that even now there are still some people hoping to go back to the way things were? Or is there a general sort of consensus that no, things have moved on?
I mean, by now, most people kind of are afraid to say, I want to go back to the way things were, because by now everyone's like so certain that we've gone into a new normal that you'd be ashamed to say like, no, I'm pretty sure like when this is over, everything's going to go back. But we know from human behavior that just humans don't like change. It's normal. They've never have. And while everybody's kind of nodding along as to like, oh yeah, the world is a different place now, a lot of people don't want it to be a different place. And I understand them. And I think a lot of what we do is also handholding humans through this transition. Like a lot of it is coaching and personal relationships, and it's going to be fine. You're going to be okay. Yes, the world's changing, but it always had been changing. You just didn't notice it before. But yeah, it's really funny. Like even now in the pandemic, I'm like, wow, I don't know how I'm going to cope with it when we can travel again. It's funny, you know, and I've only been in this situation for a year, but I'm just like, I'm comfortable now. I know how to deal with this madness, but I don't know how to deal with the world going back to something or becoming something else. And I just think everybody's tired and afraid, myself included. And so, no, people don't think it's okay and they're not happy with it. But they also understand that they don't have a choice because they spent so much time hoping that the vaccine, you know, you remember these stories, like last year was like, oh, but by September, this will be over. And then September was here and it's like, oh, but by January, we will all be vaccinated. And now that the vaccines are rolling out in some countries, it's going to take 2 years to get everybody vaccinated at the pace that they're going. And people can now do the math, which is something they couldn't do a year ago. They're like, oh, no, actually, this is it. The world is going through this tunnel and there's nothing I can do to change it. And so they accept that now it is going to be a while and they're trying to figure out what to do with it.
Wow. Which leads us nicely into one of the tenets of the conversation we're having, and that's disruption.
Mm.
So disruption has been forced on a lot of us, and we've learned from that. But what does disruption mean to you?
That's an interesting one. I think I'm going to reference something that someone we all know, Rajat, taught me about. Maybe, Varsha, you can jump in with the cultural piece if I butcher it. But when Rajat and I met, and because it's called Cosmic Centaurs, I have a lot of cosmic objects in my office, hanging on the wall and so on. And Rajat spoke to me about the Nataraja, right? Who is this god of dance, but also who comes along, is it every 400 million years or something? Like, they've covered their ass, you know, it's like 400 million years, no one will know. But essentially, he comes when the world has reached a state of order that is no longer kind of conducive to growth or improvement, right? It's just like everything is stable and he dances, right? And he disrupts everything and moves things around, but with the purpose of creating space for progressive creativity, right? Varsha, please do jump in if I'm messing this up.
It is. Okay. You are not at all messing it up. That's exactly what that entire symbolism really is, to recognize that if this is it, then let's get on with it and clear the space for something new to be born in its place.
Exactly. And so for me, that's an image that I really love to have around disruption thing, which is that nature doesn't settle, right? If you look at it just from an evolutionary point of view, you don't survive by settling, right? If you don't mutate and evolve and change, then species sometimes just disappear because they're no longer relevant. They haven't been able to adapt. And to me, it's just disruption is a fact of life. I don't see it as a big word. I know like in the beginning of the 2000s, and I think it was Clay Shirky who wrote about it a lot. And it was this whole thing about like, oh my God, disruption. But maybe also being Lebanese means you're like, whatevs, dude. Like you come deal with the fact that every other day you don't have electricity or water. And then we can talk about disruption. You know, like I've never lived in a state of stability. And so I think that image of the Nataraja really sticks with me because again, as a kid, if you grow up in a space that is constantly itself being quote unquote disrupted, or in the way I see it is not stable for a very long time, you become the kind of person who, like, when things are fine, you're like, what's going on? You know, you look over your shoulder, you're like, something's going to happen. You're always waiting for it. And so I just think disruption is a space for new creativity and new solutions and new problems. And I think it's a great space to invent. I don't see it as such a difficult word to deal with, I think.
Totally. And I love how you are explaining what disruption means, because you said something right in the beginning, and I'm going to take you there.
Sure.
When you were talking about what happened about a year ago, and you said a line where you said you had nothing left to lose. Mm. So give it a shot. Just start something new. And that pretty much encompasses what disruption means. Because if today we're at a stage where things are what they are. So to me, what I'm getting from this is more reinvention rather than disrupt for the sake of disrupting. So that's pretty much what the thought process behind in talking about disruption is. It's not because you just go and shake things up because you don't like something, but it really is about saying, do you know what? Maybe something needs to be reinvented over here. We're now reaching that stage of being stagnant. So I want to take you back to those words. And when you've got nothing left to lose, the only way is up, is what I usually say, because that's half the world says this. Tell us a little bit about what your thoughts are on that.
I mean, I can only share what my experience was like at that moment, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, like before I became an entrepreneur, right? I used to work in a company for 10 years where we did a lot of advising entrepreneurs. And as a consequence, I mean, everybody also, there's this cult of like being an entrepreneur. We've read a lot about the stories and how people do it. And we all obsess over the early days of a company when we learn how this idea came and what they did and all of that. And now that I'm a year in on the other side, and I'm not trying to say that I know that I'm going to be successful, like who knows, I might fail next year. But regardless, what I learned about disruption my way, right? Because I didn't sit down and like think about the future and look at macroeconomic indicators and like do my analysis for 6 months and then predict some kind of big change. I was sitting here and change was occurring around me. And I was just like, I'm not going to pretend it's not going to happen. That was it. I'm going to listen and I'm going to see how the world is changing. And of course, I'm going to do it within the topics that I care about, that I obsess about, that I'm passionate, that I want to wake up for. But truthfully, all I had to do was listen. And then the next thing I had to do was keep walking. And it's funny, like people look at me and they're like, oh my God, but within 2 weeks you had set up a company. And then within 2 weeks you were up and running. And then 2 weeks later you had your first client. And then a month later you hired your first person. And there's a bit of that, like, I would never be able to do that. And it's funny because now on the other side of the mirror, you know, I'm like, listen, dude, honestly, all I did was wake up every day and be like, I just need to accomplish something today. That's it. I don't think that I'm some kind of genius person who figured something out or that nobody can do what I did. Or I don't think that, because now that I've done it and I look back, I'm like, honestly, all I did was wake up and say, what are we going to get done today? And that was it. And so disruption and invention and creativity, they don't have to be big aha moments. And I don't think I had any big aha moments. Honestly, I look back, I'm like, it's really boring. I just had a few chats and thought I was inspired. And oh, I loved being a manager and thought maybe people would need help and started posting things on LinkedIn. And one day someone told me, why don't you start a company about this? And I'm like, funny, you should ask. And that was it. And I just kept going and kept moving. And I think that's another piece of that disruption, is that it's not a big aha moment. And it's not a big something massive happens and you realize forever that you're right, but rather it's a series of tiny steps. At least that's how it was for me.
And that's exactly what you were talking about, how the world reinvents as well. So milestone years like last year happen only once every so often. Yeah. It's not like every day. However, every month, there are those little changes that keep happening that, as you very rightly said, people don't realize that we are always changing.
Yeah.
We're always evolving. And only when a year like last year happens, suddenly the whole thing comes together. Yeah, exactly. So absolutely love that. And the second part that I want to go into after you've shared us what your journey. Oh, by the way, we've known each other for what? Over a year now? Mm-hmm. And it's the first time I actually know what Cosmic Centaurs actually mean and where did it come from. So I'm so glad we talked about it.
There you go.
Yes. So the second part of that is, once you know that reinvention, that disruption, the evolution is imminent and it's facing you, and you got to take the bull by the horns and you got to do it. Otherwise, you're going to get swept away in that wave that's coming. And that's pretty much what you did. You stood up and you said, dust yourself off and move on.
Mm.
And as an entrepreneur, as a modern leader today, one of the things that, if you separate the clouds in the sky, what do you see? At which point do you decide what is something for you and what is something not for you? At which point do you begin to get into that discerning space? World is full of opportunities. It's important that you begin to get into that discerning space. So tell us a little bit about that.
It's really interesting because the 1 year anniversary of Cosmic Centaurs is coming up. And humans, we love these kind of arbitrary measures. Thank you. But it's an arbitrary measure that kind of forces you to like record a milestone. You're like, okay, well, we survived the first year. And actually, the only thing I can see is how many decisions I have to make. And I remember sharing this with you guys in one of our sessions about the root of the word decision, which is the same root as the word scissors.
Yeah.
That cis, which is about what you're going to cut out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I had milestone moments where I could have made money selling something, or we could have taken on a project, and we just didn't feel it in our gut that that was the right thing to do. And the reason it's in our gut is because the one thing I'm really uncompromising about, and I think the wonderful human beings that work with me join me on that, is we're uncompromising about why we exist. And if you know that, then it becomes easier to cut things out, because that's your first principle. It's everything else is a second order. But if you know why you exist and someone's asking you to do something that goes against that, then cutting it out is simple. And we've had a couple of milestone moments like that. A potential client that would have been great money asked us to do something, and we felt sick, right? Like, it wasn't that bad, but it was just like, it wasn't right. And even though we knew that this would ruin our relationship with them forever, that they would be really upset that we were like losing good money, we had to write to them and say, listen, we're just not the right company for you. We can't do this. And it was hard, but it was a foundational moment, because what it signaled to all of us was we have a choice. We can say no, we don't have to take every project that comes our way. And so we now feel more empowered and more courageous coming into these decisions. We have so many decisions to make, to be honest. There's so many services we could be selling. We're building a piece of software called Aeon. There are so many directions we could take this into. And I'm sitting here thinking like, wow, I really need to make all these decisions, or we really need to make them. And while I worry about making sure we make the right one, I also know there's a lot of things we know in our gut. And if it turns out to be wrong, big deal. We'll start over. But it's because we're so connected to our why. I think so.
Absolutely brilliant. And right over there, you also addressed my third point over there, is once you know what is right for you and you take that decision and you stand by it, those decisive moments where you take that decision and stand by your values. And in many cases, that's why we say yes or no to something, and how strongly you stood by. What I want to dig a little bit deeper into here is that may have been an easy decision for you because you could see that picture in its entirety, whatever the picture was at that stage. How did it go with the rest of your team? And how did you communicate this with your team and enroll them in this decision?
So in fact, what happened is this request came from the client in a meeting where both Tala and I were there. And Tala's the first centaur. She's the first person to join us.
Nice.
And she and I have built so much of this together. And when the call ended, Tala was like, surely we're not going to do this. And I always need a minute. And I'm like, Tala, we can't. We sent them an offer. Like, ethically, we can't just leave them in the wind, right? We have to think about how we're going to deal with this. And I was a bit like stern, because I was like, it's about the reputation of our company too. And then I slept over it on the weekend. And Tala, you know, she's like, okay, I guess we're doing this. And so she was working on the proposal, updating it based on what they said. And I needed time to figure out how we were going to do this in a way that I could live with myself. Because while I disagreed with what they were asking us to do, I also didn't want to leave them in a ditch, right? It was like 3 weeks to the deadline. Like, it wasn't cool. And so eventually I was like, wait, I know somebody who can do what they need and it fits within like how they do things, and I can connect them, and that can be a solution, because I'm putting them in touch with someone I trust who could do the work and they would do it well. And then I did that. And then I spoke to Tala, you know, spoke to the team. We all kind of collectively discussed it and agreed on it. But I think what was more important in how we dealt with it as a team is that we do monthly retrospectives to kind of assess, you know, the decisions we've made, the work we've delivered, the way we've collaborated, and see how we can improve it moving forward. And it was a great occasion for me to tell the team, like, I had a doubt, but I didn't want to be a spoiled brat. And so I was pushing forward. And the fact that Tala expressed her doubt to me so openly, it actually helped me, because it helped me to say like, okay, you're not being a spoiled brat by saying no to a good project. You're actually doing the right thing. And it was just an occasion for us as a team and to establish kind of a new rule, which was, if it feels wrong in your gut, it don't matter what Marilyn's saying, because she's the loudest person in the room and she got a shitty character and she can out, you know, argument all of you, say it. Because then we can realize that we need to stop and think before we keep moving. Because I'm always pushing the team to like move and go fast and execute and whatever. But I told them, I'm like, promise that if any of you ever express a doubt, I will stop. And that was so helpful. And that's how we've processed it together.
Totally love that. It's interesting when you know what you want and you've got a very clear direction and vision of what that is, it's a lot easier to stay on course. And obviously having the courage, that's the other very, very key thing that you'd said, is having the courage to do the right thing. What's the right thing for you, kind of thing. Tell me, is there anything you had to unlearn in this sort of space when you came out of corporate and, you know, being the entrepreneur?
Well, there's something that I, funnily enough, started learning at Emar. I'm not sure I would have learned it in another corporate. So I don't know if it's representative of the corporate world. But I've always been a very kind of rational creative, meaning like I have to go through a process. I have to establish a strategy. I have to like do one thing at a time. It also comes from the fact that my beginning of my career was in the agency world, where you have to like convince your client of every damn decision you're making. And so it slows down the process, in fact. And I always used to joke, because I was in tech and then I came to Dubai and I worked in real estate. And I always say, like, I thought tech was fast until I did Dubai real estate, where the speed, and I happened to be here in a crazy year too. So I was the chief marketing officer of Emaar for the year where they released, I think it was 43 different properties in 1 year. So practically every week we were telling a new story, because the way you sell real estate is you're selling lines on a screen at this point, because we don't even print brochures anymore, right? There's nothing. There's a piece of land and it's barren. And what you're doing is, of course, the architects have created, let's say, the experiential story. But as a marketeer, what you're doing is you have to tell people why they should buy something now, like give you a million dirhams or two, wait 5 years for it to emerge, for them to be able to either move into it or rent it out. And why by the point they're going to rent it out, it's going to be such an amazing place to live that they're going to get a good deal. And you have to do all of that every week for a new place. And I think in that sense, Emaar really taught me, and I think the GCC is quite impressive in that sense, to operate at a speed that I never thought possible. And that's the lesson that I brought into this. And it's funny because, so two of my teammates from my first company have joined me now. And before they joined, I'm like, listen, remember how I used to be like so picky about everything being good before? Now I'm picky about everything being fast. And you guys are going to struggle. Like, I warn them, like, you're not going to know what hit you, because the speed at which we're going to operate is uncomfortable for you. Because you and I, 10 years ago, we were so focused on doing it well. But now I've learned that for 80% of everything, if you do it fast, you'll do it 80% good enough. And that's good enough. Uh-huh. And I think that's one of the most interesting lessons. And then we carved out a space where, if you're working on an idea that needs time, because those still exist, everything can't be done, you know, seven times faster with the same outcome, we label it. So we say, this is, you know, now I call it an island because of a conversation I had last week, but this is an island, meaning like, don't come talk to me about it in the daily stand-up. Don't ask about it every week. I will come to you when this idea is ready to be shared, and then we'll build on it together. But if it's going to take me 6 months, then that's okay. And so it's about kind of delimiting those spaces of what is it that we can execute that much faster that'll be good enough so that we can keep moving, versus what are those things that need incubation, that need a bit of time. And therefore, we shouldn't put them under the pressure of that daily, weekly rhythm, because they really need to be incubated before they're ready to be meaningful.
That's a wonderful space to operate from, at least what I'm hearing, because there's a lot of, it really is that discernment. When it's ready, it's ready. And equally as important, I would dare to also say that there's a lot of excellence in what you do. So it might be fast, but it's also about excellence. And it's no longer about perfection. And I think that's the unlearning that I was hearing. I mean, I have to giggle because I've been in Dubai and so has Washa. We've been in Dubai for quite some time. And at some point, we both worked with Nakhil.
Mm.
And you talk about every week and a new offering. It was, oh, goodness me. So some years ago, it was just crazy. So completely feel what you were talking about.
You know what I'm talking about.
Totally.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, so in this journey, there's a lot of thinking and decisions that you're taking. What can we look forward to in the next year or two?
You know, it's funny. So last year for my birthday, my best friend, which is soon, it's in May. I know where she knows because we're releasing this podcast in May, I think.
We are indeed.
And so Rhea asked me, what do you want for Cosmic Centers at your next birthday? And I'm like, Rhea, I want us to be five. You got to remember at the time it was me and me. And Tala had started working for me as a freelancer, but I hadn't hired her yet. And here we are. There's five of us now. And it's truly terrifying because you realize how many people you're responsible for. What I want for next year, it's more what I want than what you should expect, but hopefully they'll be the same thing. We're building a software called Aeon. It came from a conversation that I was having with a friend, again, April last year, where there was no lockdown yet in Lebanon. So everybody had a choice of who they would bring to the office and how often. And he had sent everybody to work from home. And he was giggling about the fact that his competition was bringing the team half of the time. And I said, why is that funny to you? And he said, well, this guy went from being the CEO to being the chief scheduling officer. And so it occurred to me that, you know, as the pandemic continued to be around, as work models actually not evolved, but went back to being hybrid, because if you know anything about the history of the office, you will know that it's a fairly recent invention. As that happened, there would be a need to figure out, how do you get people to continue collaborating and vibrating and connecting to each other, even if they're not constantly together? And so Aeon, who is the abundant god of time, as opposed to Kronos, the god of limited time, is a software that is trying to answer the question of, how can I help teams that are distributed or hybrid figure out the right norms, the right team identity, the right rituals, but also get a good sense of mutual knowledge? Because what we know from academic research is that when people are not together, what helps them to thrive as a team and collaborate is knowing a lot about each other. Is like knowing, are you a morning or an evening person? Who do you live with? Is there somebody you have to care for? You know, what's your favorite food? Knowing these things about each other make us better as teams. And so Aeon is a software that hopes to kind of be that team helper that helps them both structure the way they spend their time together and apart, but also how they should learn about each other so that they can be better teams. And we're launching the MVP next week.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yay.
Yeah, very exciting. And as with all MVPs, I mean, I'm like, oh my God, there are so many things that are missing from this. And how am I going to sell it? And is it good enough? And should we take another month? And then the other Marilyn's like, listen, we're going out to market, better deal with it. So I'm hoping, we've set a bold target that a year from now, we'll have 400 teams using the software. So my goal is to get people using it, and also to get them to attest to how it's helping their teams be happier, more connected, more efficient, you know, or whatever it is that they want to be, and that then we can go fundraise.
Fantastic.
So I'm going to put that out in the world and hope it works.
And just so I understand, is it beta testing, or you've already done some beta testing?
No, so we've done beta testing, and now what we're doing is we're releasing the MVP, and the first 30 teams that sign up, they will get like a handheld journey, meaning we'll start with a facilitated workshop around team building and intention setting. We'll work on their team identity. We'll help them use the software, which today allows them to do two very basic things, which is say, where do they work from today? Where are they working from? And how are they feeling coming into work? And how are they feeling leaving work? And that's it. Basic features, far less than everything we have in our backlog, but just something to start with. And then our hope is that with these first 30 teams, we'll be talking to them every other week. We'll take part, maybe teach them a few retrospectives or other rituals that they can put in place to facilitate that communication. And we're hoping to hear back from them about what would they want next. And then we'll build it. So again, this whole thing I've been teaching for a while, you know, agile and design thinking, they all rely on designing with your user. So it's not so much about you intellectualizing in a corner. It's not like, oh, I'm some genius person, I'm going to figure out what everybody needs, I'm going to build it. But rather, can I bring in my users with me? We go on a journey together. I interact with them and listen to them, and we co-design what the next version will look like. And so we're giving ourselves until July to release an alpha, and then until September to release the beta, which hopefully will have some good enough features that somebody will want to pay for it.
Totally sure there'll be plenty of features.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully someone will want to pay for them, because if they're free and everybody likes them, then that's not, you know, good enough. And then hopefully we can go and fundraise, because HR tech is a hot piece of investment at the moment. Everybody's looking at that. So hoping we can catch the current.
Totally looking forward to it.
Oh, absolutely fabulous. I love that. And what I really love over there was, you know, I know it's a podcast. Most of our listeners are not actually going to be watching your face, Marilyn. Your face completely lit up when you were talking about this. That was amazing. I'm just here watching you. I don't think you look at that energy that is going into this entire creation, because that's what it is. You've created something out of something immense, out of seemingly nothing. But it's not nothing. It was always there. You actually brought it all together, and you're putting it in a platform where it's easy to consume for those teams. It's a very vital piece of information that is missing from the teams, because they don't know each other. And that's what you're bringing together, connecting them.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I said this to my mother one day. She was like, you sound so much happier than you've ever been at work before. And I said, you know, because before I used to create things that were interesting or beautiful or that would sell or whatever. And if I did good for people around me, it was within like my limited scope of the people I managed, right? Or the people I interacted with. And what I feel that Cosmic Centers and Aeons have provided me with is I have an opportunity to help people be happier every day. And I say this, I'm not saying this, it's not a pitch. I really feel it. Like when a team connects, when they finally have a retrospective and say something that they've been holding back for a while, when they manage to forgive each other and move past it, when they manage to build something, it truly fills me with joy. And I guess I built a company that allows me to do that every day. And it's just, it's marvelous. And as a consultant, I can do this at a small scale because there's only so many people that I can reach out to as an individual. But with Aeon, if it works, then we can build a whole universe of teams and companies that feel more empowered, more safe, more creative. Like this year has been, you know, with this idea of reflecting, because it's been a year in 10 days, it's our anniversary. This year has been so full of creativity for me. And part of me is like, ugh, now the company is growing and I have to put processes on everything. And, you know, you always have this thing of like, what am I no longer going to be able to experience in the same way? And I think it's important to mark that and say, like, I understand we're moving into a new phase. I mean, it's why I built this company, but you also lose something. But it's been such a great moment of creativity. And if I can help other teams to get that even some of the time, then my job is done here, you know? So that's why it excites me so much.
Absolutely brilliant. And the next question that I'm actually going to ask you is something that you mentioned again, right in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And we've heard it. We absolutely want our listeners to hear it, Marilyn. Mm-hmm. We all have a I dare to statement hidden within us. We show it usually with our actions. We rarely ever actually say those words. So tell us what your I dare to statement is.
I dare to build with others.
Fantastic.
And I have a funny story about that one.
Oh, do tell.
It's really something I've been saying for a very long time. And when I met my now husband, you know, we were just chatting. It wasn't like nothing had happened yet. Like we weren't dating or not, you know, it was just the early days. And we were talking about like what marriage means to us or what being with another person or building a life with them means. And for me, I come from a divorced couple. And so I don't take marriage as, you know, it's not a pill that's easy for me to swallow. I'm like, whatever, this is all bullshit. So, and I told him, I'm like, you know, for me, a real marriage is a partnership. It's like building a company together. And marvelous that I'm saying this to two people who've done both, because you got to wake up every day and be wanting to build something with that person, right? Because you can fall in love with a lot of people and you can have, you know, chemistry with a lot of people, and you can be friends and find intellectual stimulation with a lot of people across genders. Like it's not a thing, right? Like just loving somebody else isn't enough for me to make a successful marriage or partnership. It's not about that. It's about waking up every day and deciding that you're going to build something with that person. And on some days it means that you're going to be creative and positive. And on some days it means that you're willing to address conflict. And it's not all, you know, happy moments, but it's all committed moments. And I remember telling him this. And anyways, he then got on a train, went to London. And I still have that video because I still have it on my WhatsApp. My husband is a very like classic man. He's really cute that way. And that night, he sent me a video of him writing with like some Mont Blanc, like traditional pen, whatever. He wrote on a piece of paper and filmed himself writing on a piece of paper, I want to build with you. And I still have that video because it's in my WhatsApp. And I think that's always been in the cards. That's always been how I see things. I just think there's something so powerful. You know, like human beings are the only species that can organize in groups bigger than 150 individuals. And we can do that. One of the explanations for that is because we're capable of inventing and believing in common myths. And I think that's the essence of why I like to build with others, because in order to do that, in order to do it beyond a certain size, you all have to be seeing the same mirage and then walk or run towards it fast enough that it turns out to be real. And that to me is pure magic. And that's why collaboration is such a big theme in my life, and innovation and creativity, because we're the only species capable of that.
First of all, thank you for sharing that story. Oh my goodness. Goosebumps all over.
That was
brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And I love that story, or the metaphor that you used about the mirage. Have enough in you to see that mirage, and have enough in you to run fast enough to make that a reality.
Yeah.
Brilliant. One of my biggest takeaways of this conversation today.
Thanks.
Completely. Leave your shadow behind.
Yes.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's a good one. Leave your shadow behind. I love that.
Oh, phenomenal. Marilyn, you have been an amazing guest, and you've shared so much and shared so generously.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was like therapy. I really enjoyed this.
It was such a brilliant conversation. And really, again, we meet so often, and yet very rarely do we put aside time to really get to know what lies beneath. And that's the purpose of bringing up these master spotlights. So thank you for being our master on today's show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And I mean, I have to thank Evan for being so insistent back in June of last year to having me join the group, because what a ride it's been.
Absolutely. And quite frankly, we're all changed because of it.
Yeah, all grown. Absolutely.
Very much so. Marilyn, thank you. We loved this conversation. There are so many takeaways and so many little stories that you shared, gave those deeper insights into what this last 1 year has been like for you and what the first year is for a lot of entrepreneurs out there. And one thing that you said completely resonated with me was, why do people go and start a company? Because A, they're good at something that they're really good at what they do. Very rarely do they realize that that's so different from being good at what it actually takes to run a business, to turn that profession into a business. So that entire conversation resonated so beautifully. We loved having you on the show, Marilyn. And now, before we go anywhere, we know that people are going to want to get in touch with you. Marilyn, tell us how and where can people click on somewhere and say, hey, Marilyn, we need to talk.
All right. I'm going to give you like the complete advertising piece.
Do that. So,
if you want to,
there you go. So I have three pieces of my persona that you can reach out to me for. The first one is, obviously, you can go on cosmiccentors.com. And then you can get in touch through the contact form. You can find me on LinkedIn and connect with me. I always accept all connections, and I always try to answer everybody who reaches out. On the other hand, and I should mention this so that Rhea doesn't murder me, I'm also the co-host of a podcast called Who Run the World. And over there, Rhea, my best friend, and I explore themes that we're interested in from the point of view of who we are, which is two young, I mean, relatively young, I'm getting less young, but two young Arab women kind of dealing with these themes from the point of view of our culture and where we come from. So you can find us on at Who Run the World Pod on Instagram. And then lastly, I know we didn't talk a lot about this here, but my other passion in life is food. And so you can find me on Instagram at Permanent Hunger. And I also have a blog called permanenthunger.com where I post my mother's Lebanese recipes.
Awesome.
So if you're in the mood for some Mediterranean inspiration, you can find me there as well.
Okay. And just like that, you gave us another topic to come back on this podcast and this conversation with you. Food. Oh, yes. Please, let's do that. Oh, yes. That's going to be another amazing conversation. Marilyn, such a pleasure having you.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Hey, hey, hey. Thanks for joining us and listening right to the end.
Head on over to daretoscale.fm to subscribe and access show notes and transcriptions.
Oh, also, did you know that we have a Facebook page for our podcast listeners? Come join the conversations at daretoscale.fm/Facebook.
Absolutely. Oh, and also remember to give us a 5-star review so other entrepreneurs can find this podcast like you and get value to scale forward their business.
Fabulous. We will see you at our next show. Bye for now.
Bye.